This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on today's show, a look at efforts in Liberty Township and Butler County to boost access and inclusion for kids with special needs. First up, financial experts call it diversification, a fancy way of saying don't invest all your money in the same thing. It's sound advice for anyone with an investment portfolio, including a retirement account. So why is it important to diversify your investments and how do you properly do it? Joining us this afternoon from Osborne Williams & Donahoe, Chartered Financial Analyst David Osborne and Portfolio Manager Russell Sims. And we're also joined by Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us with your questions at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Russell, David, and Chris, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
I wait every month to hear you say that, Chris.
I'm beyond thrilled.
Beyond thrilled.
Plus, we finally got some rain, and I hate to admit it, but we actually needed some rain, which leads me to the subject of diversification.
Okay.
And how does that
tie together?
Well, it's because we live in a world of average. There's a Dow Jones Industrial Average. There's an average annual rainfall, but if it's possible to have your feet in a bucket of ice water and your head in an oven, and on the average, you're okay. You could have
you could
have average rainfall, but if you go 3 weeks without rain and you don't water your plants, you're going to have trouble. They might die, even though on the average it was okay. And so, in the world of diversification, how do you make sure that you get an average return that does what it's supposed to do? And so the whole idea is to make sure that as an investor, regardless of how you're investing, whether it's a 401k or outside a retirement plan, that you don't run into this mistake. And perhaps you've heard people say this: I'm perfectly diversified. I own Macy's, Nordstrom, TJ Maxx. I own Home Depot, Lowe's. I own Abercrombie and Fitch. I own Nordstrom. I own Tiffany. I'm perfectly diversified. But you're not even diversified. Not only are you in one sector, you're in one industry, which is a subset of sectors.
Okay.
So the idea is, how do you build something that helps turn the averages in your favor instead of working against them?
So you're saying this is a way of reducing risk.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this all stemmed, and of course, David and Russell are chartered financial analysts and resident smart guys. They can explain the science and math that went into the work done by Markowitz and Sharp 60 years ago or so, and for which they were eventually awarded a Nobel Prize. But it was all about the notion of portfolio optimization, how to take any given portfolio or any given client's needs, investor's needs, and say, we can, given a certain amount of risk, how do we optimize the return from that, or given a certain amount of return we want, how do we get it with the least amount of risk? That's it in a nutshell. And there are now tools available online, or tools which professional financial advisors have to help clients, that are available to everybody to help reduce risk. And that's what today's show is about.
Mm-hmm. So diversifying, it's reducing risk. Does it actually keep you from losing money?
Hi, this is David.
Yeah, David.
You know, I don't necessarily think it keeps an investor from losing money in the short run, but in the long run, it minimizes losses, which makes it easier to recover from drops. And you know, there's a statistic out there that I think is very eye-opening, that 73% of the time the market is either falling or recovering from a drop, and it's only a very, very small percentage of the time that equities are creating new wealth. And so you certainly have to be in the game to get that. But in those periods where the market is declining, it's so important to have adequate diversification. And that doesn't necessarily mean the number of stocks you own. It's so important to be diversified across different industry groups and sectors that are not necessarily correlated perfectly with one another. So when one area does go down, you have another area of your portfolio that is doing well. And all it is trying to minimize the return in the bad times, so that when the good times come, you can make that back very easily.
Yeah, I heard this described as, you want to have things, a group of things that zig and a group of things that zag, so that when the one group is zigging, the other group is zagging. Russell, is that pretty good layman's description?
It is. The way I see it is read an interesting article once about a man who drowned trying to cross a stream that was 4 feet deep on average. And the point of that is the stream's not 4 feet deep all the way across. And the same way that goes with the markets is you get fairly severe drops that most investors can't handle if they're not diversified. And if you're diversified, you can stay in the market and come back, because we've learned from many client experiences that trying to time your way getting out and getting back in is the most foolish thing you can possibly do.
Yeah. Yeah, and dangerous.
Right.
Dangerous. You know, another important element is to have an idea of, as an investor, what your tolerance for risk is. And risk, by risk, it's generally understood to mean the uncertainty of the rate of return. And if you can imagine those, when you see a hurricane approaching, or when you see it on the weather, hopefully you won't be watching a hurricane approaching, but when you look at the weather map and they show this cone, they say, here's the hurricane is here, it's this dot now. And the cone expands out, you know, so that as you go forward in time, the cone might be a certain width on the day after, and 2 days later it's even wider, and 3 days it's wider still. It's just because the further out in time you go, the more things can vary. But things that are close in, like that income check that you want to derive next month, you better have that coming from a source that's certain as opposed to something that's not certain. And so understanding as an investor how much income you need and understanding how much fluctuation you can comfortably tolerate are two critical steps. If you don't know what the answers to those two questions are before you invest, you're probably better off just keeping your money under the mattress, because you will get scared. You know, it's very easy if you turn the TV on or let's read anything to get scared. And so it's one of the saddest things is to have someone get scared and sell a position in something like that they shouldn't, because they're scared. And so it means that you have to do the work ahead of time before you begin to build a portfolio that makes sense.
Okay. I think that's a great point. You know, diversification actually helps investors through the rough times, because they don't get quite as anxious about a downturn in the market when they do have various holdings that are in different sectors where at any given time one sector may be doing relatively well against others. It's interesting, at our firm we see a couple of different types of diversification risk. Sometimes we will talk with clients who come in and they have really a lot of specific risk tied to one holding or a very small number of holdings. And frequently we see this if they work for companies for most of their careers and they accumulate a lot of stock in one company. We think there's quite a bit of specific risk. In other words, risk happening to that specific company. There are really two types of risks, by the way. Just quickly, there's specific risk and there's also market risk. Market risk can be diversified away, specific risk can be diversified away. Market risk is difficult to diversify away in the short run.
And specific means it's specific to the particular investment.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So if it's a particular company, they can fall on hard times. So that's a specific risk.
Right, right.
Okay.
And that's where diversification really helps to reduce that risk, by spreading out your holdings across different sectors and industries so that you don't have the risk of something bad happening to that one company. The other side of the spectrum, though, that we see is sometimes investors are overly diversified, and they have, you know, maybe 10 different mutual funds, and if you look at the holdings of each of the funds, they might own essentially the same things. So there's definitely the other side of the spectrum of diversification, where investors tend to spread themselves too thin.
Yeah, and in fact, if you're doing it yourself, if you don't use a professional financial advisor, you can go to, there are several websites that are free sites. You don't even have to register, which is amazing. You can just use the Morningstar database, for example, and it will tell you. You can get what's called an instant x-ray, and you may have 30 different mutual funds thinking that you're diversified, but they all might own the same thing. And there are free software for free programs available that will let you know the extent to which there's overlap. And quite frequently, it's a big surprise because, you know, there are many times a portfolio manager's job, some of them, an index fund's easy because it's tied to an index. But if you are a portfolio manager and you manage money for a pension plan or for a family or an endowment, then you might have a mandate that says you should, you know, we want you to be sector neutral. You know, the consumer discretionary sector is 10% of the market. We want you to have 10% in consumer discretionary. Or financials, 16% of the market is financial services. So you should be 16% in financials. Well, you know, if you have broad leeway in the world of financials, whether you want to own banks, insurance companies, and so forth. So you have to exercise some judgment. So the key thing there is to make sure that you are diversifying not only across sectors, but also, you know, within that sector, and also to make sure that you have an understanding, again, of the asset class that you own. How much should you have in stocks? How much should be in bonds? How much should be in cash? And is there room in your portfolio, or is there a need for an alternative class such as real estate or commodities?
So if I own a fund that tracks the S&P 500, I'm putting my money in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not diversified enough, Chris?
Well, it means that
or does it just depend on my situation?
It depends on your situation because you may think that you have—
And heck, I've got 500 different companies there.
Right, but— And the average normal person would think that, okay, I'm going to put $500 in an S&P 500 index fund. I therefore have a dollar in each company. And the simple fact is you do not, because it's what's called a capitalization weighted index. So it's going to have more money in the things that are more valuable. And so if smaller companies are doing well, and this is where we're talking about diversifying by style— If small companies, so-called small cap stocks are outperforming large cap stocks, you're going to lag, because the S&P 500 is, you know, mostly a large company index.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation, and we will continue after this. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and joining me this afternoon as we talk about the hows and whys of diversifying your investments, and that includes things like your retirement plan at work or your IRA, chartered financial analyst David Osborne and portfolio manager Russell Sims from Osborne, Williams & Donahoe, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Yeah, Chris, it seems like the issue of getting your investment mix right, that's always the perpetual question. Seems like a lot of people really struggle with this one.
Well, and it's true, and they shouldn't, because you should start with just a realistic assessment of how much income you need from a portfolio now, and then how much you're going to need in the future, and then make a determination. Is higher income now more important than higher income in the future? And once you have that number, you may not need any income, right? You might be fully employed and intending to work for another 30 years. So once you understand the income number, the income concept, now or later, then it becomes how much. And then you work backward from that to an allocation. Generally, the higher the return that you want.
So if I need lots of money, I need things that are going to grow, right?
And you have a long time, then you can afford more volatility. But if you need more income and you have less time before you derive an income from it, then you need less volatility. And that's, again, whether you're working with a financial professional or doing it on your own, there are tools that are available to your advisor or to you yourself, if you feel like doing it yourself, to measure how much risk is in the portfolio. There are a number of terms to go. Beta is one of the more common notions for risk, how volatile is your portfolio versus the market. Or you can go to a Morningstar website and then see what your standard deviation is and just play with different portfolios. The lower the standard deviation, the lower the volatility, the more certain things generally are.
Russell, just for the common investor, the common guy, say it's a young man who's just starting out. He's got his first job. He's got this 401k plan. And he's trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do? How am I going to allocate my money? Where does he start?
Well, I'd say, first of all, to make sure you do participate. We see many young professionals even who are very intelligent, but that they don't know how to start. And the most important thing is to start when you're young. But from that point, most employers will provide quite a bit of information about the funds. But doing your own legwork is it will also help your anxiety about things when things start to go bad. So spend a little time and look up the funds that are available. Often they don't give you a whole lot of time when you're in the meeting and filling out your choices. But then go back, do the research, and then next quarter when you have the chance to make a change, you'll know a little bit more. But the most important thing is, no matter what you do, start participating in these plans, because the amount of wealth that you can get is better than any other route that you can possibly imagine, I think.
Yeah, and in fact, many employers now offer as a default inside a 401k plan a so-called target allocation fund or target date retirement fund. And the further out your retirement date is, the less money it has allocated to bonds and cash and the more to stocks. And then it automatically rebalances.
Just to add to what Russell was saying, and I think it is so important for young people to just get in the game. Because right now there's a lot of uncertainty in our world politically. There's uncertainty about geopolitics, the UK leaving the Eurozone. There are always things, I think, for investors to be concerned about in the short run. But it's so important to realize that volatility has always been with us, and it will always be with us in the future. And it's just the price we have to pay, I think, for being investors and getting a solid return over time. So it's important to just get in the game. And for a young person, to your question, the nice thing about participating in a 401k plan is that there's always money going into the portfolio. And so there's a continual what we call dollar cost averaging of your investments. And over time, it really works well.
Yeah, especially if your employer matches your contribution up to a certain level.
Exactly.
It's still shocking how many people just wave off the free money that employers are trying to give them in order to encourage them to participate in a 401k. And as a bare minimum, you should always at least participate in a 401k up to the maximum where you're getting that free money. Otherwise, you're telling your employer, please don't give me the free money.
So, David, is it safe to say that the younger you are, the more time you have, the more you can have stocks, the more stocks you can have in your portfolio, and maybe fewer or even no bonds when you're very young, and as you get older, you keep decreasing stocks and increasing bonds? Is that kind of a basic formula for doing this?
Yes, I think in general that's true. I think the younger an investor is, obviously, the longer the expected time horizon. And the longer the time horizon, the longer there is to tolerate the ups and downs of the market. And over time, equities, for example, have really created quite a bit more wealth than other alternatives, such as fixed income. However, even in the case of a young person, those years tend to be challenging from the standpoint that there's always expenses that come along, whether it's saving for a new home or buying a new car, whatever it might be.
And tuition.
Tuition, yes, exactly. So I think it's important for young people, even though they have a long time horizon, to always be conscious of what their near-term spending needs are going to be, and then keep a certain portion of funds liquid and in less risky investments, even though they have a long time horizon. But in general, that is true. Now, for many retirees or people that are planning on retiring in the next few years, I think it's important to really not get yourself in a position where the market could have a downturn right at the time when you're retiring and you need money. So what we always advise is segregating some funds that are held away from risky assets just as you're approaching retirement, because you don't want to be at the risk or at the mercy of the market and have to sell any of your holdings when the market might have a down day.
But by nature, bonds typically, are they safer than stocks, or is that a whole different Well, a whole different set of risks you have to be aware of.
It's a different set of risks. And, you know, we're in a very low interest rate world, as we all know, with the likely prospect of the Federal Reserve raising rates at some point in the future. So today we, you know, a bond investor has a very low interest rate on a bond, coupled with the potential for rising rates down the road, which would translate into negative price action. So, you know, bonds can be risky at times. I mean, U.S. Treasuries are backed by the full faith and credit of the government. They're not AAA anymore, as we know, but they're still pretty darn good. And I suspect that those will be just fine long term. But
You know, and a lot of people get their exposure to bonds either not so much individually, but through some kind of mutual fund, whether it's a fund that's traded on an exchange or an open-end mutual fund. And probably one of the biggest numbers, in addition to the credit quality that's important, should be not maturity, but the duration. And it's one of the most misunderstood numbers in the entire lexicon of investing, the duration of a bond portfolio. Russell or David, would you like to explain to us what duration is and why it's important and what's better in an environment where rates are likely to go up? Is it better to have longer duration or shorter duration?
Sure. Well, duration is simply the volatility of the bond with a given change in interest rates. So if interest rates were going to go up by 1%, a longer duration bond would actually fall in value by much more than a short duration bond. A 30-year Treasury bond could have a duration, you know, of almost 20. So a 1% rise in interest rates would equate to almost a 20% loss in the value of the bond because interest rates are so low right now.
So shorter is better then.
The shorter would be better if rates rise. It's very hard to predict the direction of rates though because we've had very low interest rates, and this year bonds are one of the best performing asset classes, and very few people would have predicted that at the beginning of the year.
Just like few people would have thought the Cavs would have come back to win.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So it sounds like what you're saying is even with bonds, you have to be diversified within your bonds.
And exactly. You just can't own one bond and say, okay, I'm done.
Can't have long-term bonds, long bonds, and then say you're finished.
Right. And the thing is that these things are so knowable. You can just look it up online or ask your advisor, you know, what's in my bond portfolio and is the duration short or long? Period. In an environment of rising interest rates, shorter is better. I mean, normally.
Right.
You're going to lose less money in a shorter duration portfolio.
Or you have a mix of all the different durations. Would that be a way of doing it?
Well, that's one way. But again, you can assign a duration to your overall portfolio. So mutual funds may own hundreds of different bonds, and there'll be one average duration assigned to it. And then you can measure
that. Already done that inside the portfolio.
Right. So you can measure one fund against another and say, I want the one with a shorter duration.
TJ called and he wanted to know if someone starting out would be better with a Roth IRA versus a 401k or a traditional IRA. Any thoughts on that, Russell?
I prefer starting with a Roth, especially if you're able to participate in a Roth because optimistically as you get into a higher wage scale, you may not be able to contribute to a Roth. So I like to use Roths early if you can. And then when you're in retirement ages, you have a lot more flexibility as to where you take the money from and you can control your tax situation then while you're in retirement.
David, any thoughts on Roth?
Yeah, I agree with Russell. I think they're a great way to go. You still get the benefit of tax deferral over a long period of time. And then when you do need to access the money, there's no tax. So, you know, I think Roths are a good way to go. They're not quite as effective at reducing your taxable income in the year you make a contribution. That's the advantage of a 401k or an IRA.
That's right.
You do get the reduction of ordinary income taxes. But over time, Roth IRAs, I think, really make a lot of sense just because, as Russell said, the flexibility you have in retirement.
And not only that, in terms of an overall estate transition, when your kids inherit a Roth IRA, they don't pay income taxes on it. They will actually, strangely enough, And you can see where it's coming from the IRS's point of view. They do have to take required minimum distributions, just as if it were a non-Roth, a traditional IRA, but they just don't have to pay taxes on it.
You know, and something else TJ might want to consider, too, is he mentions the Roth IRA, but aren't some companies starting to offer their 401ks in both the traditional and the Roth format?
That's correct. That's true.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join us. And Chris, what are your final thoughts on this as far as what do people need to know? Where do they need to start with this whole diversification thing? Because it is a very confusing issue.
First of all, think broad asset class. How much stocks, how much bonds, how much cash, and should I have some alternatives? And then among asset classes, what sectors do you want to be involved in? Do you want to be sector neutral or do you want to get ahead of it and say, okay, I think that telecom is going to do better. I think that consumer discretionary is going to do better. You can own companies in those sectors. You can own index funds that are tied to those sectors. You could even say, a new sector is going to be created. Real estate's coming in as its own sector in September. I want to own real estate before everyone else has to buy it. So be thinking not only broad diversification, but diversification by sector.
Okay. David, what would you what would your advice be?
Well, I agree with Chris. I think diversification by sector, but within each sector, it's important to look at different sub-industries. So, for example, in the financial sector, if all you owned were regional banks, you're really not diversified. But if you have asset managers and insurance companies and regional banks and maybe some money center banks, that gives you a little bit better diversification. Same with really any sector. Consumer discretionary is interesting. That includes restaurants, retailers.
Disney.
Disney, exactly. So you wouldn't want to own all media companies, for example. You know, it would be very important to own a company like a Nike, for example, and a Disney, and maybe a Starbucks, something like that, in different allocations. But really pay attention to the sub-industries as well.
Mm-hmm. Russell, what would your advice be?
My advice would be to temper expectations. That way you can keep your emotions in control when the market has its swings. Don't expect 20% returns. And if you get them, you know, just
be happy.
Be happy. And but keep your expectations modest. The best investors I've seen, Warren Buffett, always has very modest expectations for the markets.
David Russell and Chris, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chartered financial analyst David Osborne and portfolio manager Russell Sims with Osborne, Williams & Donahoe, and also Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And as a reminder, the information on today's show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Coming up, we'll hear about efforts in Liberty Township and Butler County to make parks and recreation facilities more accessible to those with special needs. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.